Coffee Sketch Podcast is our take on the intersection of old tech and new tech, the space between the traditional practice of the hand-drawn sketch that has been performed by architects and designers for centuries, and the modern-day use of the hashtag as a representation of a sentiment or a movement. Each week, we plan to deliver a new pod about our ideas, sketches, and what's going on in our daily lives as we pursue our love of architecture, design, and sharing this knowledge with the next generation. I'm Kurt, and I'm in Flint.
And I'm Jamie, and I'm in Austin.
Jamie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Kurt. Is it time to pop bottles yet?
Up, speak. Up, up. You know, you got to put the... make it sound like a question. I don't know. I heard it on NPR, right? Anyway, we're not... I'm trying to be an influencer.
No, you see, we're of a generation... Yeah, we're of a generation where our speech patterns are not... of the influencer generation. So
yeah,
it's just not going to happen.
I don't even know if I could do it. I don't think I did it just then.
I don't think you did. No. And you missed my reference to, like, where's the champagne, buddy? This is episode 150.
Well, no, I heard you say popping bottles. I know what that means.
Okay.
Yes.
Kurt's like, I'm in the club.
What? Up in the club. It's a subtle reminder of when we were at the AI conference in Las Vegas, where we were in the club.
Yes.
The Rockwell Design Club, which was still a fun time. Anyway, yeah, congrats, Jamie. 150.
Congrats, Kurt.
We did
this. We did it. And hopefully to many more.
150 more. Times more, I don't know, infinity, times infinity. Yeah. So we were having a little casual chat about school, teaching in the green room, talking about our students' creativity, making little entourage elements. But the real reason we're here is the podcast. Talk about some sketches, talk about a little coffee. You know, the same old things we've done for 149 previous episodes.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned entourage, and like it, you know, every time I hear that word, there are certain vocab words that just they're in that 101, you know, things that you had to learn in architecture school, entourage being one of them. And so for the folks who don't know that jargon speak that we do, Entourage, not the HBO TV show, which was actually really pretty good, but Entourage, mm-hmm. You know, not you and your friends, but the actual things that populate our renderings. And so on a show about sketches, certainly something that we have an affinity for, and we'll probably should talk about and explore in more depth in another episode. So. Put a pin in there for now, but yeah, I like it.
We haven't really talked a lot about entourage elements.
Well, and you know,
formally,
no, and there is a good story in there where even the concept of entourage became a jumping off point for one of my projects. So, and there are sketches, so we can bring those from the way back. It's not that far back, and use those as part of a foil for that episode. So maybe when you get back from your trip,
you know, even podcast hosts get to go on vacation every now and then. So I won't tell anybody where.
No,
but you might find me in a photo or two. I guess I'm pretty Googleable, as my students.
Oh, oh. Okay. Well, Mr. Googleable, what's the coffee of the day today?
Well, I've boxed up and gotten ready to ship all the coffee that is meant to go to you. So therefore, I had to go to Starbucks and buy some more beans that I kept for myself. So I grabbed the Yukon blend. Have you ever had the Yukon blend?
Yes.
It's like a medium dark.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty good. I was in the vicinity of Starbucks, so I grabbed those beans. Normally, I get myself some rootless, but, you know, switch it up and...
It's okay to switch it up. It's okay. This is a judgment-free zone on the call.
Yeah, thanks. That's what I've got going on. I probably will still have some after my vacation, but I don't know. Maybe I'll come back with something new. And
Maybe I need to send you a care package. So
that's the call. That's the quiet, the silent scream, please.
Was that the silent scream? Okay.
So what about you?
Send me some Grackle.
Yes.
Grackle.
Which actually that is what I, you know, not to segue, but to segue, that is exactly what's in my cup is the Grackle. So,
oh, I see.
You know, that's cheers to you, buddy.
Thanks.
Maybe soon.
Thanks. Yeah, I like that one. Or maybe, you know, something you haven't had. I have.
Yeah. They've been doing some small batch stuff too. And I haven't ordered any of that of late, but maybe this is a good excuse. So, you know, that they work with, they have a, you know, a variety of different growers, and it's all, you know, the sourcing of their coffee is really, really important to them as a company, even though they're based here in Austin. And so that's, I think, you know, important. It's something we've talked about a little bit on the show that we're interested in. Certainly don't know as much as we probably should for having a podcast about coffee and sketches, but we also have been reached out to by my Aggieland coffee purveyors. And so that is in a, you know, future episode up, you know, I think having a proper discussion, you know, with a research lab focused on coffee at a Texas university, that just sounds like a win-win.
Win-win. Before I show everyone the sketch. I agree. Yes. Coffee makes architecture better. I was talking to a contractor and he was like, how many cups of coffee have you had today? I said, does it matter? And he said that he has to taper down now at his age. He's not much older than I am, but you know, so he doesn't drink as much caffeine and as much as I do, I suppose. It was a fun little back and forth. It was all good. He would not be the first person who had commented on my coffee intake, but coffee's good for you. Antioxidants and all those good things. I mean, I don't know. Do you have any opinions on that one, on that health?
You're asking the person who drinks probably as much, if not more, cup coffee in a day as you. So, yes, I have to believe that it's sustaining this.
So, yeah. I mean, look at us. Right?
Yeah. I mean, you know.
Living our best lives over here.
Yeah, totally.
As they say. All right. I gotta remember to not bang my fists on the desk as I set the sketch up. So yes, apologies, Jamie. So Jamie made a couple of sketches and we have a photo of architects doing what they do, which is point at things. Do you want to see them all this together?
Well, I mean, I think it would be great to see them all together to start. I mean, okay. I think you've also got a sneak. You snuck something.
Oh, you're right. We'll cover this part first. Right. So there is a new t-shirt available. You know, we aren't the only people with merch. American Institute of Architects also has their own merch. And they have this real fun t-shirt. And I'm sure I'll let you fill in with more detail. But you might know when they started this. But basically this t-shirt that they have in the store now has added our good friend Evelyn Lee, and it's the list of all the women AIA national presidents across time. And so now we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, that's 8. Evelyn is the 8th.
Kurt is doing the math, folks.
I needed two hands for that.
Yeah, goodness.
So anyway, I don't know. Yeah, when did they? I think this started. I don't remember. Do you remember?
I'm not sure if it was like maybe right after Jane. Maybe Emily did it first. But yeah, so I think, you know, it's And it's not just, women national presidents, but it's also to some degree also it's a generational shift too. But I think what I loved about seeing this sort of highlighted was it wasn't anyone of the last three who was highlighting it. It was Helene who kind of brought this one out and sort of, brought it to everyone's attention here, very, very recently. And, as somebody that you and I both know well and admire for a lot of reasons, Helene is certainly somebody that, when she speaks to something like this and highlights it for folks, I think not just those who know her, but I think she carries a presence about her that is one where people listen, even if those who follow her or are friends with her or colleagues of hers maybe don't even know the importance of this, and not just the importance of it, but also that there's only been 8 ?
Evelyn is the president of all time. So yeah, so that's 8-ish%, 7-point-something%, a very small percentage.
Very small.
Yeah. So I saw that this was in the AI store. We both saw Helene's post on LinkedIn.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't point out that there's a Texan on there too. So just saying. Yes.
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth. Yep.
So I just threw that in there on our whiteboard. It's nice, we use this whiteboard for the year. It's kind of nice to have like these little bits of information as a retrospective, kind of like we did at the end of last year. You kind of look at the whole board. Anyway, we'll revisit that by the end of the year. So we have Frank Lloyd Wright, 150. And Jamie got to go visit a Frank Lloyd Wright house in what city?
Yeah, so I was in Amarillo, Texas. So Texas, big state, folks. For those who aren't here, and even those who are here, we don't use our hand as a map, though.
Well, too bad.
Though I do appreciate the Michiganders who do. It's something that I initially thought I was being punked when they started to do that, but sure enough, it does seem to work. But I will say that Texas is probably the only state that is so proud of the shape of its state that it appears on everything. And so there's some clever branding in that. So the panhandle is that literally the handle up in the northwest portion of the state. I'd be remiss if I didn't say that the wildfires that are out there are as bad as if maybe even worse than what's being reported. So if folks aren't aware of the terrible wildfires, that have blanketed that region, it is the largest wildfire ever recorded in the state of Texas.
Wow. And we know the state of Texas is a big state.
It's a big state, right. And so it's kind of north and northeast of Amarillo, multiple counties, lots of reasonably large cities that are up there, Canadian being one, Borger as well, that have all been affected. Lots of damaged structures, structures just lost. So it's just acres and acres of land. But we were up there recently for some work, and we're also fortunate enough through some friends to be able to tour one of 4 Frank Lloyd Wright designs in the state of Texas. Yeah, so there's 2 in Dallas, and then there's 1 in Houston. In Dallas, so of the 4, 3 of the 4 are residences, are houses, private residences, and then 1 in Dallas is also a theater that he did at the tail end of his life and career.
But not the theater in Dallas.
Well, there's a bunch of theaters in Dallas.
Well, you know which one I'm talking about.
I know which one. Yeah. No, not you know, not the Texas theater.
We're not going to bring up any conspiracy theories right now. Jamie's got to get to it. He's got to get to watching his soccer.
Football. Yeah, I mean, you know, let's keep this episode moving along. I mean,
well, so this is Amarillo, and so that means that this is one of the houses. Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. I was just being a little funny. And but yeah, so it's makes it even more rare, you know, few and far between to be able to access, you know, Frank Lloyd Wright. You know, he has sort of an interesting past now that, you know, we've learned more about it. But as an architect, you know, he's super talented and had a really interesting approach. And I don't want to use the word style because I have a friend who reminds me, you know, that it can be a loaded term, but you know, Frank Lloyd Wright had a lot of creativity and ability to invent spatial experiences and characteristics, and his homes were definitely each one, you know, unique and full of very, very custom sort of unique details. So I literally know nothing about this particular house, given Texas. So I'll pitch it to you. You have an outside image, exterior shot, and an interior sketch.
Yeah, and I'd say that, you know, just as much as this wasn't on your radar, you know, this wasn't on mine as well. I only learned of this particular house in the last year and a half or so, having done some work in Amarillo and talking to folks out there, kind of learned of its existence. And so this is the Sterling Kinney House. And, you know, for the Frank Lloyd Wright aficionados out there, there is another Kinney House. So sometimes there people will get the two kind of, but no, this is in fact in Amarillo, Texas. And we were fortunate to tour it with the house's second owner. So,
wow.
Yeah. And they've had it for about 20 years. It's still kind of a primary residence, not their necessarily primary residence. They do live in it from time to time, but then guests stay there. They use it also for, you know, kind of vacationing and, you know, events and friends and things like that. So, but it's as many other Frank Lloyd Wright residences that one, you know, would be more aware of, they're basically museums. To a large extent. So the fact that this one is a residence really, really wasn't altered and has a lot of the original furnishings in it and a lot of the original built-ins in it. The owner also had the original plans and specifications. So they, you know, because they bought it from, you know, the first owner and the estate of the first owner, they were more than pleased and more than generous in sharing what they had in terms of the drawings. And I mean, just to get totally, you know, architecture junkie geeky about this, they literally had the tube that the drawings were mailed to the first owner. So yeah, it was, you know, it was pretty great.
It's super rare to have the drawings in any, well, for any building, but especially, you know, historic ones and well, well-known architects. So yeah, now that's why I flipped over to the image of you architects pointing at drawings, because I was joking about that earlier, but it makes for a good pose for any kind of website work. But that's really cool to see the drawing, you know, that's very rare. And for us, I guess it's more interesting maybe because we can read the drawings specifically.
Well, and it was fun to kind of talk about it with the owner a little bit about what we were excited to see in those images. You know, I shared my sketchbook and kind of, you know, my penchant for drawing, you know, with them. But you can see where the walls have a really distinctive battering to them. A lot of Frank Lloyd Wright's residences have that battered wall effect. In the first sketch, you can see from the exterior kind of that battered wall, as well as some curvilinear walls, some radiused brick walls. Wright did come out to this site and help site the building. And he was commissioned to do the project in 1957. Wright passed away in 59. The house was completed in 61. So he didn't necessarily see it finished, but his firm, and which eventually became a school, Taliesin West, which we've talked about in a previous episode here recently, you know, that's where all the labels and things on those drafting tubes, you know, were, and the specifications. But yeah, so the walls have basically a 5-degree batter to them, which seems very small, but when you think about, you know, what that does spatially, it does become something of a unique feature. There are also some really, really interesting details at the hearth. So if you go to that second sketch, and that's what we were actually looking at here in section, so the hearth has a custom metal grate, and it's set within a series of rings that are sunken right there at the hearth area. And that metal grate is set with both within the hearth, and it was designed by Wright. It's actually in the construction documents, so all the drawings for it are there. But the two walls that you're seeing here, and what I tried to capture in the sketch, which really is really almost too hard to do from this angle, either side of the hearth itself, those two brick planes that are vertical and plumb, they're actually shifted by one brick. So there's some, and then you can see sort of that extra plane of brick above the hearth. And what that does is it mediates the two wall planes there. So there's this subtle shifting of the vertical planes. And then what's interesting, kind of, you kind of carry it all the way through, the metal grate at the bottom actually almost interlocks between those two walls, and kind of serves as the way to kind of interlock between those two things. It's a really, really clever detail. And you can kind of almost imagine what that process is of somebody who's, you know, sketching and doodling it out and iterating to get to that moment where they're like, oh yeah, we're shifting these walls. The grate in plan is going to be the way to kind of lock them effectively together. And that was, you know, those kinds of moments were things that were really special to see, both in being in the house, but then also seeing the plans themselves.
Focusing on the idea of the hearth is a good example that you could actually, if you don't know anything about Frank Lloyd Wright, you can use that to sort of key in on images or photographs or drawings of his other buildings, especially houses, because he does put a lot of emphasis on the hearth as this focal point, and everything kind of radiates or is sort of held in gravity or orbit around the center point of the hearth. And actually, I did see your photographs in addition to the sketches, which I don't have here for today, but you can see the sort of sunken, the stepping down at the hearth, which is groovy. It's pretty cool. And then you have the hearth, which I'm going to have to go back now and look a little more detail at the actual hearth grill itself. But yeah, you know, the idea of as you put it, like locking the two wall planes and creating this sort of keystone in a way. I mean, it's not really a keystone, but it's like this, the anchor to everything.
I think that's a great way to describe it. I mean, you know, keystone is the right, you know, is the right concept here. I mean, it doesn't literally do it, but I think from a design point of view, it figuratively does it. The other thing I'd sort of say is we're sort of, you know, looking at this interior, and you mentioned the orbits that are kind of created, kind of radiating forms. Wright's work always is about dematerializing that boundary of interior to exterior, and really allowing the occupants in the house to have really controlled views. The owner of this property said, you know, it really, and they had studied Wright, and they are a fantastic steward, and they will continue to be a fantastic steward of, you know, it's right to be in their hands. And that was very, very evident. But you know, as they were talking about living in the house and experiencing it through the seasons and, you know, and throughout a day, where light is coming in and what those views of the horizon are from inside, where the sun sets is, you know, is obviously very, very important. But here, because the walls are effectively in all the main living areas, a lot of glass, you don't want to have that glare. And if you're kind of sitting in these rooms and, you know, experiencing other people, and you don't want to have that glare kind of coming in, you don't want to close the blinds, you know, so it's very, very deliberate, that positioning of sighting the house and then also where these views are. But in the same sketch, you sort of see this orbiting around the hearth, and then the furniture off to the left of the sketch is original to the house as well. It's a kind of a banquet style couch, curved, that mirrors all of the other orbits in plan. It has a built-in shelf behind it, and sort of that welcomes you into the house. And then beyond, you can actually see kind of in the far corner there, that battering that I'm talking about with the brick walls kind of at an angle. But there's this other idea of creating pass-through spaces, and not necessarily pinch points in a plan, but where you're compressing the space to make people kind of move through it.
We try and teach our students that the last word, you know, that idea of compression and expansion, and, you know, the tension about making, you know, creating movement through those efforts. So it's a good example. I'm going to go now. You have to go watch a soccer game. I'm going to go. Well, I got some homework from Jamie to do, but I also got to go look at what I can find out about this building, because I'm interested to see a little bit more, see if I could dig up a little more on the internet.
Well, thank you for letting me share that one. I mean, it was a very special opportunity, you know, for, you know, someone who loves history and architecture. I mean, you had been, you know, probably feeling very similarly, you know, about that opportunity. And yeah, to be able to do some sketches as well associated with it, to try and capture it from my own memories and then share with all of y'all listening. It was pretty neat.
Thank you for listening. We both hope that you enjoyed this episode of Coffee Sketch Podcast. Our theme music is provided by my brother, who goes by at Cold Fashioned on Instagram and Twitter. Our podcast is hosted at coffeesketch.buzzsprout.com. Find more show notes and information from this episode. And finally, if you like what you heard, please rate us on iTunes and share us with your friends. Thank you.